This is the web stream of KBOO Portland. KBOO is 100% community supported. If you have not yet become a member, go to the website kboo.fm and click on the tip jar.
Flowering plants and a great many other things too. Biodynamicists have a different outlook, and a lot of what they do tends to pan out and very successfully, as long as you're careful and follow directions. The sidereal forecast of the moon in Pisces. This is the best sign for planting soft fruit. It's a time of maximum water intake for plants. So if you're thinking of some bare root fruit trees, and why not think about bare root fruit trees, now's a good time to be planting those. Get those in the ground now when there's plenty of water. But be careful about that, because heavy, wet, soggy ground is not good for a lot of things. And that's it for the forecast, both conventional and alternative. We're going to speak now with Mark Lakeman with the Village Building Convergence for 2013, and this year we've got, the theme is Urban Succession, Shift and Sprout. That's very interesting. Succession is a very, very important factor to be considered, especially in permaculture, but in many other approaches to growing things. I want to welcome Mark to the KBOO Airways, and we're so glad to have you with us this morning.
Thanks, Chris. How are you doing?
We're doing really well here. It's fine. We know. I want to first, before we do anything else, thank everyone who participated in the recent membership drive. Everyone who became a member, renewing members, all of the volunteers, all of the programmers, all the people who made that happen and continue to make it happen 365 days a year. We are very, very grateful to everyone who supports the station. It is sort of like growing your own food in a way. Mark, I wanted to talk about this idea of succession. I'm interested in this. This concept, because of course, I suppose around 10, maybe a little further back, 10,000 years ago, it seems that humankind had a choice. The road forked, and we had the option of becoming a settled and agricultural. Planet, or we would be hunter-gatherers, which had been a way of the way that people had obtained their needs for thousands of years. It's a peculiar choice. People apparently were happier, healthier, and there were many advantages to the hunter-gatherer life. When people decided they were going to opt for agriculture, they settled down. They grew food, they stored it, they traded it, they protected it with their armies. And hey, presto, we wind up 10,000 years later with Wall Street. So the idea of succession, in terms of the village building convergence here in Portland, how do you see some of the projects interpreting the notion of succession?
Well, succession, of course, refers to cycles of activity in which one sort of cycle builds upon previous ones. And so we have in the Village Building Convergence, as in every form of activism, people who are already underway as well as people who are beginning. And so I think, you know, we're already in a process of succession, and it's kind of the natural order of things anyway, that things will grow and change over time. In fact, succession is another way of talking about evolution itself. You know, in the sense that evolution is a series of cycles that are driven by larger cycles of nature, of course, being driven by the cycles that we travel around the sun, for instance. But in the Village Building Convergence, we're trying to help people have a conceptual tool which helps them to realize that though they can have a big picture of where they want to go, where they want to take their community, probably towards sustainability, founded on some sense of access and inclusivity and justice, nonetheless, they have to begin somewhere. And in the beginning, all they can really do is begin. In our fast food culture, it can be very confusing for people who want to have a big impact, and yet they're only at the beginning. So we're trying to help people realize that just by starting, they are entering into a process, if they keep with it, that can lead toward a longer-term, larger-picture impact. So it's inspiring. It's also somewhat comforting to realize that small things lead to big things if you kind of have your eyes on the prize and you begin strategically. I think just by talking about succession, we're talking about the natural order of how things happen. We're also bringing a really powerful conceptual principle from permaculture itself to bear in the urban environment.
Sure, and of course, the concept. This is this year's Village Building Convergence is obviously going to be talking about how things can scale. So some of the ideas that are going we're going to be exposed to this year on a very small micro level will scale upwards and be applicable to societies and cultures, perhaps farther afield, and in both time and space, and that's what's so interesting about it. We were very much looking forward to this. Can you let people know a little bit more about how to get involved? Because as you've mentioned, people want to start right from where they are, not worry about anything in the past, but right here, right now, start making these changes. How do people begin?
Well, they can always begin independently of us. But with respect to the Village Building Convergence, communities started back in November when they started to review the request for proposals that we put out at the start of November every year. And then the proposals came back at the end of January. And then at that point, beginning with February, we've been having almost every weekly meetings, every Thursday, which have to do with trainings in fundraising, teaching people how to facilitate creative dialogues and design processes in their neighborhood.
Well, Mark, just briefly, the website for people so that they can access all of this information, get involved right now.
Sure.
We're running out of time because it's Eric Cascadia. Let people know how they can start getting involved right now today?
Sure. Okay, go to cityrepair.org/VBC and just go there for some contact information. The event itself, all the planning and activities leading up to the event, which is May 24th, Friday, May 24th to Sunday, June 2nd. And that's the span of time where people can show up from anywhere and just jump in to all of the daily projects. There's going to be something like 40 projects all over the city at the same time for 10 days. And then evening events, which will be up on Alberta this year, 126 Northeast Alberta, at a place called the Abbey, where we'll be having dancing and speaking and all kinds of different workshops and localization sort of modeled food, so community dinners based on organically produced, locally available foodstuffs.
So this is people have been afforded a whole architecture and many ways to get involved in what is really the potential to change your community and change your life. So thanks so much for that, Mark. We've been speaking with Mark Lakeman, the Village Building Convergence, and an exceptional permaculturist. So I want to thank him very much for joining us and invite him back frequently as we approach that date. Thanks again. We're going to go now to a national story that a lot of our listeners are following. Bradley Manning is seemingly morphed into really a symbol of the age that we live in, confronting this monolithic wall of secrecy, government secrecy, and malfeasance at crimes, crimes which turn out they are morally crimes, but turn out to be perfectly legal, and things that look perfectly legal, which can get you sent away to prison. So we are in strange days, very strange days, and we're fortunate to have Jeff Patterson with the Bradley Manning Support Network joining us this morning to bring everybody up to speed, because there have been some developments. Good morning, Jeff. Thanks so much for being with us today.
Morning, Chris.
Really glad to have you back. So, Bradley Manning is, as we know, we're in the pre-trial phase of this ordeal. There have been a few change developments. Can you bring us up to speed quickly?
Absolutely. Bradley Manning is the young soldier who is facing life in prison for giving WikiLeaks a number of classified documents. This Wednesday through Friday is Bradley's second-to-last pretrial hearing. The actual court-martial will start on June 3rd. But this hearing will deal with a fight between the prosecution and defense over what evidence can be allowed. Things like, was evidence found illegally by the prosecution? And on the defense's side, they'll be fighting to make sure that Bradley's motives and the outcomes of the release of these documents are being heard. The government says Bradley's motives simply don't matter. They don't contest that he was motivated because he wanted to do the right thing. The government simply says it does not matter. And beyond that, they say he aided the enemy and he should go to prison for the rest of his life. So this is a big deal. We only got one more pretrial hearing after that, and that'll be in May, and that'll deal with how to deal with classified information within an open or semi-open court-martial setting.
Right. Jeff, thank you so much for that. We're completely flat out of time. I want to thank you once again. We've been speaking with Jeff Patterson with the Bradley Manning Support Network. This, of course, has been Air Cascadia for Monday, April 8, 2013. Get the facts, know your rights, take a stand. Thanks for listening and stay tuned.
This KABU program is made possible in part by KABU Foundation members and a grant from Wilkin & Company, PC, Certified Public Accountants, helping businesses, individuals, and nonprofit organizations make financial decisions based on their personal values since 1987. Wilkin & Company is located at 2435 Southwest 5th Avenue in Portland. Information at 503-225-1359 or WilkinCPAS.com.
Good morning and welcome to Locus Focus. I'm Barbara Bernstein, your host for this weekly conversation about our place on the planet. When you look out your window, why are you so much more likely to see a crow or a robin than a Kirtland's warbler or a California condor? How does this rarity of species How much does this rarity of species have to do with human activities, and why are some species who never have any contact with humans also rare? This morning, we'll get some answers to these questions from my guest, Eric Dinnersing, author of The Kingdom of Rarities. We'll talk about the ecological importance of these rare species and the urgency of protecting all types of life, the uncommon and abundant alike. Eric Dinnersing is lead scientist and vice president for conservation science at the World Wildlife Fund. Eric, welcome to Locus Focus.
Thank you very much for having me.
And I want to say I enjoyed your book very much because it was a perspective on rarities that I have never really had an opportunity to embrace. And it's made me think about how we often think of endangered and rare species as the same thing, and yet there is quite a distinction. I wonder if you can tell us what is the difference.
Sure. Well, first of all, it's not just you, but there are even many scientists out there who don't realize that most species on Earth are rare. So, in fact, rarity is common. So the difference between an endangered and a rare species is, so a species can be rare if it has a very narrow range or it has a very low population density, but it could be distributed over a very large area. But endangered species typically are those that have low numbers, are usually only in a very few places, and are often threatened by some major human activity. Anything from loss of habitat to flooding to fire.
Well, you talk in your book about you basically go around the world chasing after all kinds of rarities, but some of these rarities, they're rare and has nothing to do at all with human interaction. They're not close to urbanization or farming or any of the other hazards of human activity. So why are certain species more rare than other species?
Well, let's take the easiest example. So top predators. Whether we're talking about tigers in Nepal, as I do in my book, or great white sharks, there are probably about the same number of tigers on Earth as there are great white sharks, probably no more than 3,500 right now in the wild. And wherever they occur at very low densities. And the reason is that it simply takes a lot of prey items to be able to support a single top predator. So that's the easy one, where you have a species is at the top of the food pyramid, and you just simply can't have a lot of them in a given area. On top of that, tigers are extremely territorial, and the reason being is that they have to defend large areas where there's enough food to be able to produce their cubs. We know that it takes about 52 elk-sized deer eaten a year, so about one a week, to fuel a breeding female tiger. So it's really basically a matter of energetics.
So, after we start with the, you know,